Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time!
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah!
I finished these fights.
Give me a hell yeah!
Top Rope Nation.
Learn to love it! It's the best thing going today.
All right, everybody. It is Monday morning, episode 287 of Top Rope Nation. Ryan Droste, Kyle Ross, not even 12 hours after AEW Revolution went off the air. It's one of those morning shows. Hopefully, we'll have some of our listeners from across the pond, a big source of Top Rope Nation listeners. Roughly 20% of them, Kyle, are over in the UK. And rarely do they get to tune in live. Well, the time is working out for them today. It's morning here in the States. I got my Starbucks rather than the booze like we normally have on the show. I got the caffeine. I'm ready to go. How are you doing, sir?
I've already plowed two cups of coffee, man. Got the work done. Yeah, ready to do it in the morning here. Quick turnaround between the pay-per-view and our review. It seems we're pretty unanimous. We meaning the internet in our review of this show, I guess, how it's been received.
Did he cut out? He's cutting out. I'll start talking. It's all right. We've had some internet issues this morning. Guys, if you are joining us here in the live chat, let me know what your grade is for the show, A through F. I will tell you my grade here in a second, but let's look at the Twitter.com users and how they graded AEW Revolution. This is what we always do on our pay-per-view show. So if you're tuning in here on the SE Scoops YouTube channel for the first time and you've never listened to Top Rope Nation, take a look at this poll. This is what we do after pay-per-views, A through F. And our listeners pretty much universally on the A and B range, we've got 67% of the users giving this show an A. We've got 20% giving it a B, 4% a C. I don't know about that. And 8.7% a D or F. These people got to be trolling. It's got to be the WWE loyalists here trying to downplay the greatness of AEW Revolution. Because, guys, if you didn't see the show, hell of a pay-per-view. I mean, this was, in my opinion, for AEW, it was one of their all-time best events, top to bottom. And they've had some great, great shows over the years, as we've talked about here on the podcast. But I mean, this is the best one in a long, long time. You had two legit match of the year contenders on this show. And, you know, what I always say myself when I'm looking at grading the AEW or the WWE pay-per-view shows is, all right, so if it's going to be an A show, it has to be something that is like a legendary angle, or it has to have a match on it that I would rewatch. And this show had definitely two match of the year contenders. The main event, the Iron Man match, was unbelievable. Kyle and I, when he gets back here, we're going to talk about if this was the greatest Iron Man match of all time. I think there's definitely a case for that. Maybe it's totally one-sided. We all think it is for sure. We'll see. Hit me in the chat and let me know what you think. But also, you had this Texas death match with Hangman Adam Page and John Moxley. It was just crazy. Just quite the spectacle. Bloody as hell. Incredible spots throughout. I mean, talk about trying to follow that. The TNT title match was in a horrible position and the crowd was burned out. But I mean, this is before the main event. So I also want to talk with Kyle too when he returns here about the match order, because I think it ended up working out fine. They got the crowd back for that main event, but I think they could have tweaked it maybe a little bit and made it even better. But you got both of those two matches, which were great stuff. And then the trios title match was also unbelievable as well. So you're talking about two match of the year contenders, potentially another really, really solid match. And honestly, the undercard was full of really good matches as well. I thought the match with Jack Perry and Christian was pretty much exactly what it needed to be. There was some talk about, was this a very, very predictable card going in? Maybe. I think there was maybe one match I got wrong in my predictions piece here on scscoops.com. But overall, I mean, I think it's pretty much what they need to do, but that's okay. I think pro wrestling, when it's predictable, is not always bad. I mean, we went in thinking Bryan Danielson was not going to win the world title. But you know what? When you were in the midst of watching that match, I'll talk about this with Kyle, when you got down to the end there, I mean, I think I'm a pretty smart fan. I've been covering wrestling for a while. And, you know, I knew, Bryan Danielson isn't winning this match. But, man, they had me biting on those near falls and the close submissions there at the end, too. And that's when you know professional wrestling is done really, really well. When even, you know, the most tuned-in fans in the fan base, even media members such as us, can be biting on those near falls. And you just get totally lost in the match. That's where I was. That's where I know a lot of our listeners were as well. We have a great Facebook group. You can check it out. It's Top Rope Nation Pro Wrestling Discussion on Facebook.com. Join the group. We had a live thread going over there that was really fun throughout the show. A lot of people indulging in adult beverages as they talked about AEW Revolution last night. So I had two poll questions, actually. So we did our usual A through F on what our listeners thought about the show, but then also I asked the listeners, what was your match of the night? And I mentioned before there was three really, really solid matches, but Brian MJF, the 60-minute Ironman match, that garnered, out of 66 votes right now, 71.2% of the vote. So I mean, overwhelmingly, that was the match of the night for people. But you know, before that match had happened, that John Moxley Hangman Adam Page match, I was thinking that was going to be tough to beat. About 20% of our listeners came in with that being their match of the night. No surprise, even as great as the Iron Man match was, a hell of a match, absolutely a hell of a match there. And then 9% went with other. So yeah, Brian and MJF running away with it. I think I got Kyle back on the line. Is he there? Is this Kyle Ross? Kyle Ross, are you calling in to Top Rope Nation?
Testing. We here?
He's here.
We'll see how this goes, buddy. I've had some trouble in the 11 a.m. hour with the internet in the last 48 hours.
It's all right, man. I think I held it down solo there for the last few minutes. All right.
Yeah. Well, better than Aaron solo, I'm sure. I'm fucking hot right now. All right.
All right, Kyle. So we were talking about grades, and I just went through... I'll just give you a brief recap.
I'm glad I missed that part of the program. Good. But my
least I'm still going to ask you for your grade.
Not going to do it.
I'm still going to ask you, but I haven't even given my grade yet, I don't think. Ooh. Maybe I did. I can't even remember. It's all a blur. I was talking about, all right, where the listeners were, and I had that poll up here on the screen a second ago. Let me put that up for your own reference here. Yeah, I mean, the listeners were overall A and B. And I talked about how this show had two.
Nice to see that 9% of America, 9% of the Twitterverse is completely stupid, but that's okay.
Yeah, that's the DF. Right? Delete your Twitter if you gave the show a DRF.
Delete yourself.
But yeah, but I said, all right, so two matches, they're definitely like match of the year quality contender matches, I would say. A third one that was excellent. I said the undercard outside of that was pretty much exactly what it needed to be. We'll go through it all, but I said I thought, you know, like Jack Perry and Christian was pretty much a good match for what they needed to do. Lots of really good stuff on the show. I'll give my grade. If I didn't, I can't remember. I was scrambling a bit, but A, I'm at an A on this, because as I said, my quality control, my own thoughts on how I'm going to grade a show is it has to have a match I would rewatch or an all-time great angle on it for me to consider giving it an A. I didn't think there was anything egregiously bad on the show. And I thought with two match of the year contenders, two matches I'm sure Dave's going to go 5 stars on, I got to go with an A. This was an A pay-per-view for me. And I thought timing-wise, Kyle, they also did a really good job. You know, we talk a lot about how long these pay-per-views have been over the years for AEW. But dude, I mean, they got it done in sub 4 hours with an Iron Man match. So for AEW, I think that's pretty incredible. And oh my God, I lost Kyle again. Kyle is gone. He just doesn't want to talk about AEW Revolution. I got Gabe Benson checking in the chat. great show. If you're watching right now, let me know your thoughts on the show. Look, my co-host is in and out, so you can get really involved in the show if you'd like right now. And let me know what you think. I will be stunned if Kyle doesn't give the show an A or an A minus. We'll see. He can't hear me right now. When he jumps back on, we'll see. But man, yeah, it's an A show for me. Give me your grade and your reasoning for it here in the live chat as we go. And let me just say right now, before I go through the card proper with you and hopefully have Kyle back on the line to do so, that Top Rope Nation is a weekly podcast since 2016, guys. So I see our numbers right now at the live stream. If you are tuning in for the first time, make sure you hit subscribe here and tune in every single week. We always live cast our shows, and then the podcast version goes up immediately after. We're available wherever podcasts are found. And we have a Patreon page, patreon.com/Top Rope Nation. It is the number one way to support what we've been doing here for almost 7 years now. Hard to believe. You see the name scrolling across the bottom of the screen. Those are our fantastic patrons. And I want to give a big shout out to Mr. David Jenkinson for joining the Patreon page this past week. David's brother, Michael, has been a mainstay on the Patreon for a long time. Michael Jenkinson has tuned in or has joined the show on several occasions, both here on the main feed and Top Rope Nation Extra, our Patreon bonus show. And David met him out in Las Vegas last year during Double or Nothing weekend. We had a Top Rope Nation meetup during that AEW pay-per-view weekend. That was a lot of fun. David was there, as was Michael. Had a blast. I'm trying to get the guys to commit to going to Las Vegas again for Double or Nothing. I don't know. I've talked with Justin about it. He's leaning towards no, but maybe you guys can sway him. I haven't really brought it up too much to Kyle yet. I see he's not back on the line here yet. So we'll see if we can convince them, but I'm in if I can get these guys to go. I want to do a show at the Blue Wire Studio again. I think that would be a lot of fun. We did it last year. Check out the Top Rope Nation YouTube channel if you want to see the video of that. We were live at the Wynn Casino in the front lobby. Tons of fun. So shout out to Blue Wire, who's been sponsoring Top Rope Nation for the last, 3 years now. See Tim Jensen checking in the chat. The pay-per-view was forking great. Yes, it was, Timothy. It's great, great stuff. All right. I don't know when Kyle's going to jump back on. So I think I'll just start running through the pay-per-view proper. And, you know, I was going to start with the main event. I want to get Kyle's take on that, though. This is going to be pretty dang difficult to do by myself for an hour-long match. So until Kyle gets back, I guess we could start off from the top. So they open the show with Chris Jericho and Ricky Starks. And we've talked a lot about Ricky Starks over the years here on Top Rope Nations, this up-and-coming babyface in a promotion that needs to have, you know, new baby face is starting to take over. And Ricky Starks got a big win here over Chris Jericho, which I think was a must. He had to go over here. Kyle, are you back?
Maybe. I don't know.
I said I was going to start with the Iron Man match, but I don't want to do that without you. I definitely want to get your take. Yeah. So let's talk about the first two matches. And if your internet doesn't die, then we'll jump to the main event. How about that?
Okay. We're live, pal. Just real quick. Okay. I think the first time I got cut out, I was making the point that I will still defend my very pessimistic post that I made on Facebook before this show. For anyone who may call that into question. Number B, I give the show an A. I think a case could be made. There it was the second best AEW pay-per-view of all time. And number C, as we get into the card proper here, yes, Ricky Starks absolutely needed to beat Chris Jericho, and I think the internet should take a collective victory lap because I think this result was a direct byproduct of us all bullying Chris Jericho online and saying he wasn't really putting people over, and he did. So there you go.
All right, you know what, our live viewership just went up significantly, so you know, we're doing decent numbers, but it went up since I was doing the solo, Kyle. So now that you're back, hopefully the people stay tuned in as I'm trying to carry the show solo and scrambling by the seat of my pants here.
Yeah.
All right. So you gave an A. I predicted when you were off here, when your internet died, that you were going to give it an A. I was hoping you would give it an A. All right. And yeah,
objective, you know, individual.
I agree with you. And you said on our Facebook group about Jericho and Ricky Starks, if Chris Jericho went over here, you were going to be throwing things.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Starks was so over if you go back to that MJF match.
Yeah.
When he got the title, and it was way too early to give him the title in that situation. But, you know, he felt less over coming into this pay-per-view than he was going into that MJF match, which is a reflection of, I guess, the feud. You know, I still have my skepticism over Jericho putting over Action Andretti. You know, I read The Observer the next week, and it just felt like Dave was repeating verbatim what Jericho told him on the phone. to be frank, but hey, Starks won here. Hopefully he goes on to have a strong year here in 2023. You know, obviously he didn't get in trouble for accompanying Cody to the Rumble. That's good. The only thing I didn't like about this match was I didn't like how Guevara still came down to ringside even though the JAS was banned. I thought that was totally unnecessary. Yeah. They were trying to set up a false or a near fall where the crowd would bite that Jericho was going to get the win. But I think there were other ways to, like, if you're going to have the stip where they're banned from ringside, don't violate it. I mean, I thought in their minds, they're like, oh, well, he's going to run down and Andretti's going to spear him and that'll look cool. But I don't know. I thought that was actually unnecessary. You could have done a ref bump. I know that's hard when Aubrey's the ref, but I didn't like that part. But yeah, the main thing here, Starks needed to win. He did win. So one for one.
Yeah.
In the booking department.
Yeah. So finish was, as Kyle mentioned, Sammy comes out, Action Andretti takes him out. Ricky got hit with a bat by Jericho as the referee was distracted by everything happening on the outside. Jericho goes for the Judas effect, which Ricky then blocked by putting his forearm up. And
was a great spot blocking the Judas effect. Almost made up for that needless interference.
And he won clean with the Rochambeau. So, yeah, that opening match was very, very good. Let's talk about Jungle Boy and Christian quick, and then we'll skip to the main event because that's going to be on everyone's mind. And then we'll come back and then go through the card in order. But number two out, and I read, I believe this was in Fightful's report, that originally Jungle Boy and Christian was going to open the show. Jericho Starks was going to go second. They swapped it around. I'm not sure that really mattered too much, but... yeah, Jungle Boy and Christian go number two here. We got to mention Christian's outfit, which was
unbelievable.
Unreal. The sleeveless turtleneck that he was wearing with the black wrestling singlet. Amazing. Amazing stuff. This Christian, Kyle, you've always been talking about how you like Christian better than Edge. And this stylistic choice from Christian puts it over the top, man.
Yeah, although he was getting a real sweat in there. I wonder what Justin Joint thought about the sweat with this fight, even though the turtleneck was sleeveless, man. Woo, that thing wasn't letting a lot of heat out for being a sleeveless shirt. You talk about the order being flip-flopped. Yeah. I actually think that paid off, that worked well. I think because this was a better match than Jericho and Starks, and I think Jericho and Starks would have been hurt coming off this. This was a very, very good match between Jungle Boy and...
yeah. I think he's dying again here with... oh, maybe he's back. Oh, he's still there. Okay, he started to cut, but you're good. Yeah, you know, the only match order thing I said when you were off air, I was going to bring this up, was that we talked about going in, and I think Stuart had mentioned it in our group, that there was an argument to open with the Iron Man match. And before I saw the Iron Man match, and after the Texas Death match, I was like, ooh, man, maybe they should have done that. But... they ended up carrying it fine. I think they could have done that because, I mean, obviously the Texas Death Match, as we'll get into, was a hell of a spectacle. But it ended up working out fine. So by the time you got to the end, you know, there was the death spot after the Texas Death Match, the TNT title match. Yeah. Nobody could have followed that. But they got him back by the main event. So, yeah, Jungle Boy Christian. Yeah, go ahead.
And I don't think you want your world title going on first. I don't know. The old school person in me, I just doesn't like that at all. I hated when... WWF, even though when they had two world titles, would put one of the world title matches on first. Never was a fan of that at all.
Yeah. So you mentioned this was a excellent match. Jack Perry took some wicked bumps in this match. He took a fall onto the steel steps when they were down by the ring. At one point they were fighting up to the stage. He flipped off the stage to the floor. He took a backdrop on the stage near the casket area and bounced off the stage. That looked pretty brutal. But in the end, yeah, Jack wins with the concerto. You know, he's going through all the emotions of should he do it or not. He's going to literally bury his mentor here, and he does it. He nails Christian with the concerto.
I think given the way the feud had gone, I thought I could have done without the I'm so conflicted here.
Yeah.
I think by this point of the feud, he should pretty much want to put Christian in the fucking ground.
Yeah. They showed Jack's family, by the way, who were at ringside, notably. And after the concerto, he drags Christian into the casket. You know, this is like an actual casket, not one of those like WWE constructions. Kind of like WWE used to use in the early days of the Undertaker. He drags him in there, crosses Christian's arms, kisses him on the forehead, and then he slams the casket door shut. And right as he slams it shut, the casket drops and there's a smoke.
That was kind of silly, I thought. But whatever. Again, yeah. Though, now we're 2 for 2 in the booking department. And I think something that is going to be a, well, I don't think, I know, because the show's over, I've watched it all, but it's a running theme all night, the AEW homegrown talent going over folks who have been in the WWE.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, good stuff. Indeed.
This feud went on, it seems, forever because Christian got hurt. But It's nice that Jungle Boy obviously needed to go over. I thought the only time Christian had ever taken a pinfall loss in AEW was to Omega at All Out last year. You pointed out in the Facebook chat that he also was pinned by Adam Cole, apparently, at some point.
Yeah, in Dynamite in April of last year. Yeah.
Okay. So, but still, Christian doesn't lose much, so it means a lot for Jungle Boy to go over here. And, hopefully Jungle Boy goes on now, along with Ricky Stark. Same thing. It's interesting what's next for these guys. Okay, you put them over, they get big wins. But of course, as we know in wrestling, it is all about the follow-up as well.
Yeah, absolutely. This
was a very strong fourth best match on the card.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, like I would agree this was. I put this probably in like the 3.5 star range. Yeah, for me, Jungle Boy and Christian.
Yeah. All right. I want to talk about the Iron Man match right away. Okay. I wanted to do it first, but I think you're good now. I think the internet's going to hold up. So let's talk about the Iron Man match. Because everyone that's tuning in wants to hear about that. What's that?
Okay. I said, let's be negative about it. I'm yeah, right. Pessimistic. Okay. I got a team with a 20-point lead, minute left. I still think there's ways that they'll screw it up, man.
Well, while I have you here, let's talk about the Iron Man world title match. So, of course, it goes on in the main event spot. MJF comes out and he was wearing that devil mask that he wore at All Out, which got people talking, you know, about Punk and the originally planned feud they had for these guys to conclude at Full Gear before Brawl Out and all of that. There, you know, obviously no CM Punk, but in the post-match scrum, MJF seemed to be toying around with the Punk stuff still a little bit. We'll talk about that here after the match. But he comes out with a small orchestra that played his theme with violins. That was pretty cool. He got the world champion entrance here. Brian came out with his typically lame theme song.
Song is so bad.
So bad.
It's one of the worst theme songs, not just for a good, an all-time great pro wrestler. It's one of the worst wrestling theme songs I've ever heard in my life.
It's horrible. It's absolutely. And it just doesn't fit his personality. No. It's auto-tune singing. And
yeah, when the vocals kick in, you're just like, oh, God.
It was okay before they added the vocals to it. When he first got it was just the beat. I was like, all right, this works. I wanted him to come out to Final Countdown. Obviously, it couldn't work because of the financials. But I was like, all right, this will work a little bit. No. Once we got the lyrics, like, what the hell is this? So bad. All right. So as I get ready for the match, Excalibur was selling the fact that Brian's been here before. You know, he's wrestled numerous times over 60 minutes. He kept talking about like he's wrestled a 74-minute match. He was calling out different times.
Yeah. And we should point out, you know, that 75-minute match was against Austin Aries in Ring of Honor. And it's got one of the great backstories of all time. There was people talking about it on Twitter last night. Trevor Dame, who does a Ring of Honor history podcast, You know, the idea for that match originally, Danielson's idea was to go over 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 2 out of 3 falls match, and he could sense pretty early that this crowd was not going to deal with the 2.5 hour match, because who in the fuck would ever want to watch a 2+ hour wrestling match? Yeah. So they went home at 75 minutes.
He was looking to recreate Gotch Hackenschmidt. Yeah. Jeez. Can you imagine? Yeah. So let's see. At the very start, so Brian was trying to entice MJF into mat wrestling. Brian was like doing jumping jacks to taunt him. Both guys talked about how they trained so much for this match. MJF talked about in the post-show scrum, like this very strict diet he was on. All this is legit, you know, to get ready for this. And they looked by the end of the match like they could have gone even longer, even though they sold like the oxygen. We'll get into all of that. But yeah, MJF was really, really good.
I liked in the opening, like, I don't know, 15 minutes or whatever, 10, 15 minutes. They didn't waste time with wrestling that didn't lead it. Like, they didn't, like, work a body part, which ultimately leads nowhere. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. that's, like, an easy thing to fall into when you're doing these long matches. You know, the MJF was doing a lot of stalling heat tactics. I know there's one that is certainly the talk of the internet this morning, something that he did.
That's where I was going next, yeah.
Okay, but... Yeah, I like that. Very good pacing early on.
Yeah. Yeah, so Max gets into the crowd, and he's, like, taunting the fans and acting like he's going to fight them like he always does. And he goes over to this mom, and she's holding her drink, and he asks for the drink. So she gives him the drink, and then he throws it on her kid. And when it happened, you're, like, not sure if it was water or an alcoholic drink. Turns out it was tequila, from what I heard this morning.
Yeah.
And this kid was not happy. He was not a plant. This was not planned. Evidently, right afterwards, fans nearby were trying to settle the kid down. The kid was very, very upset. You got to be careful when you're doing stuff like this if it's not planned. Eventually, Amanda Huber came out. She was trying to settle down the kid. And eventually, I think like Will Washington from Grapsity, he was there, and he went and like got something from the kid from the merch stand. Other fans were like offering to give the kid their shirts and stuff because his shirt was ruined. He's reeking of tequila. The mom was not happy. She wasn't having it. But eventually they settled him down, and he was into the show and like and booing him. And there was a point late in the match where they were fighting right over by him, and they wanted like the kid to throw a drink on Max this time. But yeah, he got to go backstage after the show. Tony talked about it in the post-show scrum. They gave him tickets to the Sacramento show this Wednesday night. I'm sure he got a bunch of autographs and pictures with the wrestlers, and it turned out to be a memorable night for him. But you know, it was great heel heat. But you want to have those people planted, and not just, especially when it involves a kid, not just do it out of nowhere like that.
So the mom's reaction was so phony that I just assumed it was a plant.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, he grabs the drink and then whizzes on the kid, and the mom's like, ah! Like, I was like, okay, all right. I'm like, and that's funny. It's a good visual, him throwing water, you know, on a kid. But the fact that it wasn't a plant, and the fact that it's tequila is a big uh-oh. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, sit here and pretend that I don't think it's funny, but.
the kid got tequila in his eyes. His eyes were burning. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. It's not, you know, it's not like a deal, you know. I remember in the days of yore when Ted DiBiase like kicked the ball out from the kid who was dribbling, and that kid, they said, was really upset.
Mm.
This is beyond that. You if they get out of it without like a lawsuit or anything like that, I think they should kind of breathe a sigh of relief. Cause yeah, I think you just got to pay the kid and his mom off and hope there's no hard feelings there. Cause it's something that can make you look bad.
Yeah. So when he was asked about it, Tony Khan said, you know, he was talking about it with Max right next to him in the scrum. And he said that he talked to him before they came out here about this, and this was unbecoming of a world champion. Of course, like Max is rolling his eyes and, you know, doing whatever next to him, because he's playing up his bit. But I'm sure he'll think twice before he does it again. But it seems like they got out of it all right. But it was a little dicey there for a while. So, all right. So, yeah, as you said, Max is great with the crowd early. About 15 minutes into the match, Brian hit a sunset flip powerbomb out of the corner that I wrote down as an awesome spot. 20 minutes in, Max missed a moonsault to the outside. He was really selling his knee. Brian then followed that up right away with a suicide dive to the outside. They had this near fall series, 23 minutes in, just rolling counts, you know, small packages all around the ring. But then we get the first fall. So approximately 26 or so minutes in, Brian goes up 1-0 after he hits a psycho knee. And then after that, there's this series, which was a little confusing as it happened, but MJF hits a low blow and then he immediately covers for two quick falls. And so watching that, I was like, all right, so did he just go up 2-1? But then they explained on commentary, and they were even confused a little bit,
that yeah,
the low blow was a DQ called after the fact. And then Max got two quick falls. So they didn't like break at all. And I think we've talked about this in the past on the show when we talk about Iron Man matches. Why don't they just immediately go for a second cover? And they actually did that here. So Max sacrificed himself by getting the DQ to then get two quick falls. So he was down 1-0. Now it's tied 2-2 since he got DQ'd. And we're about 26 and a half minutes into the match at this point. And then Max rolls to the outside for a water break. What did you think about this sequence?
It wasn't executed the best it could have been. And the fact that like people in the building were confused. Like I saw Alvarez tweeting, wait, did they DQ him? And I was like you, I just thought he was up 2-1. And then I think it was Excalibur mentioned that there was a DQ in there, but it didn't feel like the bell rang for a DQ.
Yeah.
Or that the referee called it visibly. So yeah, I think they could have done that better, but it's always a great heel spot in the Iron Man to do something like take the DQ to lead to, you know, two falls. Triple H did that in the Judgment Day Iron Man match. I want to say maybe like Rick Rude did something like that in the Beach Blast one too.
Mm.
So, yeah, I liked the concept of what they did. I think the execution could have been tightened up for sure.
Yeah. He wasn't like visually enough signaling DQ. I think it wasn't Remsburg.
Yeah, maybe it's on the referee. I don't know.
Yeah. But what we found out, so it's 2-2 at this point. As I said, they're almost halfway through the match here. And I want to also say, for an Iron Man match, this match flew by. And one of the big things, and I was tweeting about this, was I like that they didn't have the clock up the entire time. Because I find that when they get the scoreboard thing up, like WWE's done this in the past, I think that's so distracting because I'm constantly looking at it. I'm thinking, oh, geez, 52 minutes left. Oh, man, there's still 48 minutes left. But here they were breaking in. It seemed like about every 15 minutes, maybe every 10 minutes, they'd put it up for a little bit. Now, when we got to the second half of the match, it was up longer periods. I was fine with that. But like when you got 55 minutes left, I don't need to see that thing ticking. And so I like that. That was a nice choice. And it made the time really fly by, I thought.
Yeah.
So, yeah. 35 minutes in, they're fighting up to the top rope. MJF ends up knocking the camera off to the ground, like the mechanical camera that's, you know, tied up to the post. And then Brian took a pretty brutal fall to the floor. He banged his shoulder on the ring apron as he fell. Eventually, MJF sets Brian up on the timekeeper's table outside, and he comes off the top rope with an elbow drop. We're 36 and a half minutes into the match at this point. Brian barely beat the count to get into the ring. MJF then comes outside. He gives Brian a jumping pile driver through the rest of the table that was still left that is barely standing. And then MJF really sold his knee afterwards. Brian's bleeding now. MJF tries to squeeze more blood out of his forehead like a pimple. He's like squeezing the cut on his head. There's 20 minutes left in the match at this point. And then MJF did his move where he gives him the pile driver through the ropes and he covers. 40 and a half minutes into the match for a fall. So we're about 20 minutes left, and now MJF is up 3-2. You got anything on that sequence there, Kyle?
I'm waiting to the end.
All right. So then MJF has a flurry of punches as Brian's bleeding all over. MJF screams, "Is that you? You're the best in the world. You fucking suck. I'm the best. Say hi to Birdie," he says. More punches. He's looking at the camera. "I told you this would happen to Dada." We're 45 minutes in. Brian reverses an Irish whip on the outside. He sends MJF into the ring post. Brian then hits a running knee off the apron. Brian goes up top. He comes off to the floor with a splash to a standing MJF. They get back into the ring. This was cool. They fight up to the top turnbuckle. Brian does the spider superplex 47 minutes into the match, where he does the superplex, but he hangs himself by the legs, you know, out of the corner, so he doesn't take any impact. Then he does still take some impact, though, because immediately afterwards he hits a flying headbutt off the top rope. MJF starts bleeding profusely now, Kyle. He took a lot of aspirin because that blood was flowing. And if you remember last year, the dog collar match he had with Punk at Revolution, Punk bled all over the place, and MJF barely got any blood. So he made up for that this year because he bled like crazy in this match. It was insane. Brian with a psycho knee at 49 minutes, and then he locks in the LaBelle lock, and MJF taps. There's about 10 minutes left at this point. We're all knotted up 3-3. Brian goes to lock it in immediately again. MJF turns it into the salt of the earth. Brian rolls through, puts in the LaBelle lock again, but MJF rolls it into a near fall. And they're selling on commentary that all the blood on Max's face is the reason he could slip out of that. And Brian couldn't quite keep the LaBelle lock on. I like that. I thought that was a nice touch. MJF puts on the salt of the earth again. Brian's trying to get to the ropes. Max really cinches it in, and then he grabs Brian's other arm and one of his legs, and he's pulling back like three of his limbs, and Brian uses his one free limb, his other leg, to get to the rope for the break. It's about 7 minutes left in the match at this point. They're exchanging blows on their knees, 6 minutes left, back and forth. They have this shot where like MJF is gassed. They shoot to Brian. He's laughing. 5 minutes left. The announcer says it on the PA that there's, I think it was 5 minutes left at that point. Yeah. And they both start exchanging quick right hands. You know, they're getting down to the end of the match. They're chopping each other. MJF hits a finger poke, but runs into a roundhouse kick. Brian hits a big forearm. Brian charges. He gets sent to the outside. They're up on the apron. MJF gives him the heat seeker pile driver again through the ropes. Two count this time. They fight up to the top rope. There's 3 minutes left. Brian with elbow strikes. MJF grabs him, hits a tombstone pile driver off of the corner. Max clutches his knee afterwards.
He's done Brian. That before. Who did he do that before against?
Yeah, I thought I had seen him do this. I don't remember who it was, though. But when you see him doing it to Brian, knowing about his history, you kind of cringe like, oh, Jesus, I hope he's holding him tight, you know. And afterwards, Brian is he's out. He's on the mat. Matt out, MJF's clutching his knee. They zoom in. MJF has this huge knot on his forehead. Max like pounds his knee, crawls over. Brian kicks out at two, and he locks in a single leg crab. There's 60 seconds left. He was playing possum to lure in MJF. MJF goes for the ropes. Brian drags him back to the center of the ring with 40 seconds left. MJF is almost tapping out, but he bites his fist to prevent himself from tapping out. He's selling. He's about to tap. There's 15 seconds left. Brian grabs his arm. He hooks that back too. He's really cinching this thing in. The crowd's counting down, and we hit the bell. Max, MJF, he taps right after the bell rings. Right after the bell rings. Justin Roberts comes on the PA, announces it's a draw. Of course, the crowd is booing. Both men are given oxygen in the ring, and they show Tony Schiavone up at the announce position. He's on the on his headphones talking with Tony Khan, recreating Gorilla Monsoon here at WrestleMania 12. Tony Schiavone walks to the ring. He announces that Tony Khan does not want this match to end like this. It's sudden death until the next fall. There's got to be a winner. We're 27 years after WrestleMania 12, also in California here, but up the road in the Bay Area. MJF shoves the referee, and he gets rolled up by Brian for two as they get underway. And MJF low blows Brian with a kick, rolls him up, and pulls his tights. You think that's the finish? Two count again. MJF picks up the belt, which he had brought into the ring after the 60 minutes had expired. And Bryce Remsburg tells him if he uses it, he loses it. He says, be my guest, try me. He screams at MJF. So he hands the belt to Bryce, and then he pulls out the Dynamite Diamond Ring. At this point, Brian hits a reverse Hurricanrana, but MJF still has the ring, so you're thinking he's going to use it. Brian with a psycho knee for a two count. The crowd bit huge on that. They thought it was over. The Brian was actually going to win.
That was a very good. I actually bit on it.
I did too, and I said that's when you were off air too. That you know a match is good when the most plugged in fans or like the wrestling media who went into this match thinking that there was no way Brian was going to win are biting on those. Like I bet on it too. I'm like, holy shit, is he going to win this match? You know, I was into it at this point. Then Brian is hitting some standing kicks to MJF's leg. He locks in the half crab again. This half crab he kept doing was unbelievable. How much he would cinch this thing back. At that point, you know, they're kind of teasing that MJF might use the ring to punch him, but Brian pulls the ring off MJF. MJF is pounding the mat, but not tapping out. Brian's really, really sitting back on it. You're wondering if it's going to be the finish. MJF reaches the ropes for the break and then taps. So Danielson, whose back is turned with the hold, obviously, he thinks that MJF has tapped, and instead MJF rolls to the outside. And when he gets to the outside, what's laying there on the mat but one of those oxygen tanks that both men had received oxygen, you know, after the 60 minutes had expired. And Brian crawls over, and MJF hits him with it from the outside. And then he tosses that oxygen tank away so that the ref doesn't see it. And then MJF gets back in the ring, and he locks on Brian's own hold, the lapel lock. And you think Brian's out. His hand drops. One, two. And then on the third time, he holds his hand, and he's trying to get the crowd back into it, and he's starting to fight out.
I like that.
I thought that was the finish for sure. He fights out. The crowd's getting behind him. Excalibur yells, Brian Danielson will not be denied. And then Brian slumps back down, and he didn't pass out. He tapped out.
Yeah, I was shocked by that, to be honest.
I was too. I guess, kind of surprised.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess the goal of this match was very clearly to put MJF over in a major way, where people saw him as a better wrestler than they saw him going into the match. Yes. I was tickled a little bit by people who thought he was not capable of doing this. You know, I think sometimes people fall into a trap because people wrestle a little differently, that they think maybe they're not as good as like the standard, like what is a good wrestler. But I joked on Facebook, the thing I was least concerned about going into this match was MJF being able to go 60. You know, I was fully confident. I mean, he's had a number of great matches throughout his AEW. This was obviously his best career match though. And I think it's mission accomplished, which is the goal, that people now see MJF in a more positive light. I think coming into the match, one of the things that, one of the criticisms I had was that he wasn't really any different, MJF, than he was pre being like world champion. MJF wasn't much different than pre-world champion MJF. Now this gives him a little bit of a boost. He had his, you know, people are going to recognize it as his best performance ever. He wins. You know, it's something he can constantly go back to as a character. Oh, I beat Bryan Danielson in a 60 plus minute match. And yeah, they absolutely hit a home run. This is one of the best Iron Man matches I ever saw. I'm going to watch it. I'd like to watch it again, because I'll be honest with you, I was actually getting a little tired last night down the home stretch. And I'd like to watch this while I'm completely wide awake again before I properly rate it and, you know, and give that official tally. But yeah, absolutely one of the best Iron Man matches. They held my attention for 60 plus. And MJF moving forward, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they can continue building him as the pay-per-views come and go.
Yeah, I personally would say that this is the best Iron Man match of all time. I mean, I think it's better than Bret and Shawn. I think it's better than Rock and Triple H. I like that match better than you do, obviously, as we've talked about. But it's definitely better than that. I think it's better than Rock Triple H. It's better than the Lesnar Angle one, that they had on SmackDown almost 20 years, maybe about 20 years ago now. Yeah, they held my attention the whole time. it's just amazing to think about the fact that Bryan Danielson, just a few years ago, we thought we'd never see this guy wrestle again. And here he is putting on a freaking 65-minute classic on pay-per-view in the main event at AEW. It's in the running for best AEW match of all time.
I would agree with that, for sure. Yeah. You know, the only other Iron Man match, getting back to that discussion, that I would consider rating above this would be that Rock Triple H one from Judgment Day 2000. People can check that, our review of that match in the archives, mm-hmm. by the way, if you're a Patreon. But yeah, I would put this one right up with the best. It's funny, Bryan Danielson. How many of the best singles matches in AEW have his name attached to them? You know, Omega, the two with Paige, yeah. and this one. I mean, you could argue maybe the four best AEW singles matches of all time are all Bryan Danielson matches. And I would certainly, you know, put this right there among with the other three.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, outside of like, yeah, you got Cody and Dustin, obviously.
Yeah,
their first show. But outside of that, yeah, I would agree. Singles matches for sure. He's been in almost all of them, just, you know, yeah. insane.
And you just think about it. I mean, not to, you know, be a nitpicker, but, you know, again, people, you know, if you're going to nitpick one promotion, you're going to nitpick them both. You just think, God, if they booked him better for most of 2022.
Yeah.
Going in, you know, I mean, yeah. You know, I mean, maybe it means a little bit more, but, you know, never look, we know Bryan Danielson's an all-time elite worker, one of the greatest in history. And, you know, MJF, he is more over now than he was 24 hours ago. And that was the goal of this match. So mission accomplished in that regard.
Kyle, you know what puts this one over the Triple H Rock one for me? It's the submissions, because boy, oh boy, Rock sharpshooter, awful looking. Here, these submissions were tight, man. Half crab, the salt of the earth. They all look phenomenal.
You know what? You know where this one doesn't measure up, though? We needed CM Punk coming out on a motorcycle to American Badass.
Yes. Dude, it sounds like, in the way this card played out, it's looking like MJF is going to work Hangman next. And he sold that in the post-show scrum.
Makes sense.
I talked about how that he was asked who he wants to work with next. And he mentioned some names, but he went on and on about Hangman. He didn't mention Punk by name, but he continues to tease it. You know, like when he came in, he was screaming he was the best in the world.
Yep.
He had the white towel on with the blood, looked just like Punk at All Out. Instead of munching on cupcakes, he was munching on these pickles. Mm-hmm. Hey, I thought that was a nice touch. Look, what do you do when you cramp up? You drink pickle juice, right? Like, that's the old track trick. And he's munching on these pickles. He's like, God, these pickles are good. He tells one media member to come up there and try one. And he's like, I'm serious. And this guy comes up and he eats a pickle and walks off, taking some payola there from MJF. Mm-hmm. MJF just going after the media too, by the way. It's just phenomenal stuff. It's like, I think people are probably scared to ask him questions. He called on Liam Crowley from comicbook.com first. I think he must be the guy who replaced me there when I left comic book. And he was like, comicbook.com? It's like, oh, just like the New York Times or something, which was pretty funny. He told Denise Salcedo her voice was annoying. It's just like, yeah. This guy's such a good heel.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I like pickle juice after a shot of Jameson, the old Jameson pickleback, man. That's always favorite in a bar. Now I forgot what I was going to follow up with. Oh, one that we didn't mention that happened during the match that was really good was MJF talking to the camera.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Oh, it's in terms of who he's with. Yeah. Paige would make all the sense though, based on who won the two big matches coming out of this. And yeah, they teased Punk and, you know, in a perfect world, Punk would be back, but it's not a perfect world as we know. So,
yeah.
You know, and there were a lot of people, I think, that, you know, the good news is there was a lot of baby faces that went over on this undercard that you could mm-hmm. see as future MJF opponents, because they do need to do that. That was something Dave, I know, brought up with the Observer several weeks ago. I talked about that with Frank on an edition of Extra. That, you know, there needs to be more than just one viable baby face for him moving forward. Let's, you know, you have to get a few more.
Yeah. Yeah. So as we mentioned, let's go back to the top of the card. So you got Starks going over, you got Jungle Boy going over, two strong baby faces there. Then they get to the Trios title match. Elite defending against House of Black. And I wanted to shout out Taylor, patron of the show from the Chicagoland area. He was in our chat over on Facebook in the Top Rope Nation group last night. He mentioned that he saw Brody King at one of his rock shows recently, and he had mentioned to him that they need to do less spooky stuff and more ass kicking. And that is what we got here, Kyle. This is what we've been asking for with House of Black. And they were booked really, really well in this match. Obviously, they go over, they captured the trio's titles. And Brody himself, he got a lot of offense early, looked really, really dominant. There was a spot where I think it was Matt Jackson. He put in like this hangman sleeper over the top rope where he's just like hanging in midair. That was really, really cool.
He did that with Darby too. I remember way back when it was cool. Yeah.
Yep. So what were your thoughts on this one? I'll let you talk a little bit here.
Yeah, that was a great match. Yeah. It was the best House of Black has looked in AEW. I agree. I think I said the same thing as Taylor. It's nice when you're not doing like this spooky, you know, second rate Bray Wyatt bullshit. You're just being badasses. Mm-hmm. And this group, you know, looked much better off for it. So, yeah, I thought this was the Elite needed a good match too, because I thought they were kind of their star was fading a little bit, and the numbers bear that out too. If you look at the ratings, interesting here that they were the lone kind of homegrown AEW act that put over people from the. Now I know Brody King is not a WWE. Guy who came over from there, but obviously Malachi Black and Buddy Matthews are. So that this was kind of the exception to the rule booking wise. And I think the trios titles were tailor made for the Elite, but it also didn't seem to be working them in that role. I was a little disappointed. Yeah. Like it didn't feel like a big deal. It felt like they needed to be doing something else. And so it'll be interesting now that we've got new champs, what the House of Black does and if they can build this trios division into something meaningful.
Yeah, Justin and I talked about that a couple of weeks ago and how even though the titles were clearly made for him, it has felt kind of like a waste to have the Elite there where they always got to wrestle together and you can't do Kenny singles matches as much and the Bucks
you are could.
Out of the tag pick. I mean, you could, but like we got that long series of the best of seven. Which I know they had some great matches, but I wasn't a huge fan of it. It went on too long.
No, putting the same match on television seven times is suicide, I thought.
Yeah.
And the ratings aired overexposed that out. Them.
Yeah. Well,
and you know what the problem was? You know, I actually picked up on this about a couple minutes into the match. You know what made this match, for me, work better than anything they did with Death Triangle? Is it was not tailor-made opponents. Like, it felt like the Elite, when they got the belts, they were just working with people that could do their style of match. It was just old hat over and over again. This, they kind of had to work a little differently, and it was just more interesting.
Yeah.
Like, over the course of that best of seven, I just lost interest. You just knew what it was going to be coming in, and they did exactly what you thought. It's not that it was bad, but this was just a more interesting match, I thought, where the Elite had to... because they were working a different style of opponent, had to change up how they worked. And that's always just more interesting to me as a wrestling fan.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah. No, this was clearly the number three match on the show. It was very good. And you're seeing, as I said, House of Black, how we've wanted them to be booked for a long time. I guess I'll just take you down through the finish here. Late in the match, you had Omega and Aleister Black exchanging strikes back and forth. Julia Hart was out there. She was getting into the match, you know, interfering here and there. Brody went to grab Nick Jackson, but Matt was there, helped his brother super kick Brody. Omega took out Brody with a V trigger. Later, Kenny's hitting Malachi Black with Snapdragon suplexes, and Julia Hart gets up on the apron. She's trying to distract Kenny. Eventually, Kenny hits the V trigger on Julia Hart off the apron.
His reaction was funny.
And then the House of Black grabs Kenny and they spike him with the Dante's Inferno. House of Black has Omega totally surrounded in the ring. The Bucks come back. They pull Buddy Matthews and Brody out of the ring. They hit super kicks on them. The Elite hit Aleister Black with a BTE trigger, but Matthews comes there to break up the pinfall attempt. Matt Jackson calls for the Meltzer driver. but Buddy counters in the House of Black, finish off Matt Jackson.
That was awesome.
Inferno. Yeah.
That was awesome, the knee. That was really good. You know, it was funny, they actually leaned into on commentary the idea that Buddy Murphy is kind of like a Kenny Omega copycat and likes to do his stuff. So you know, I thought that was good. But yeah, all right, a 4-star match, it felt like, watching it. So it'll be interesting what you do next, I guess, with the Elite. Do they want? They need to want the titles back, though. Otherwise, it makes the titles not seem meaningful. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think we both sounds like we agree that we want them to do something else.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd like to see them do something else. I want to see Kenny in some singles matches. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about Kenny and his future right now.
Yeah. Maybe they're going out the door. Maybe that's what this was. Maybe hit the bricks, Elite. Have fun.
Some people thought that Kenny was, or Tony was asked about Kenny and potentially having time tacked onto his contract because of his injury, and he didn't really get into the specifics in the scrum, but he, you know, he basically just said again he hopes Kenny, he thinks Kenny's one of the best wrestlers in the world, and he hopes that he's with AEW for a long time. That's all he said.
Pretty generic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny, I mean, they don't exactly have a wealth of contenders built up for these titles. They, in the pre-show, they put over Mark Briscoe and the Lucha Bros, which, you know, is different than the Lucha Bros and Pack, but you know, it's still the Lucha Bros, and the, you know, I'd like to see moving forward, you know, more trios teams built up for this. I think that's how you know, just like any division, you need depth. It's not just about having a contender of the month.
Yeah, that's how you incorporate this massive roster, right?
Yeah,
make use.
Yes, yeah. I mean, they have like 8 billion people. Sure.
Yeah. All right, women's triple threat: Jamie Hayter defending against Ruby Soho and Saraya. You know, the talk about where Ruby Soho's allegiance lies. She came out. I noticed this. It was, I guess it was kind of a hint towards the finish of the match. She had this jacket on that listed like 3 things, and there was check marks next to them. And one of the things that listed, I think at the very top, I wish I had a screenshot, it said homegrown, and that was not checked off. And as we see at the finish here, she goes with the Fed girls, right? Turns against the AEW girls here. So really quickly on the match itself, I mean, obviously Jamie Hayter is the most over of these women. You got Britt out there at ringside with her. At the very start, they're brawling through the crowd. Saraya and Jamie Hayter get back to the ring. Saraya's working her over with stomps. Later, let's see, Hayter and Saraya wrestle for a while, and then Ruby jumps in and she gives a suplex to Saraya. Jamie grabs Ruby and rocks her with the Hayter breaker. Ruby hits Saraya with Destination Unknown, but Hayter is there to break up the pinfall attempt. Ruby goes for a kick, but Hayter ducks it. She rolls up Ruby and pins her. The pinfalls seem to like kind of come out of nowhere here. Afterwards, Tony Storm, who is at ringside, jumps into the ring. She begins to kick Hayter, who's down. Baker comes in to even things up, but Saraya and Tony Storm swarm on Baker. At this point, Ruby Soho is over in the corner, just seated in the corner, just kind of looking out at what's happening. And eventually, she joins Saraya and Storm. So at first she kind of like tossed them to the outside, so you think she's, you know, with Hayter and Baker, but then she turns, and then it's Ruby Soho, it's Saraya, and it's Tony Storm beating down Jamie Hayter and Britt Baker, and those three walk off together. Any thoughts, Kyle?
Right person won. As far as Soho turning, I don't know. It's like it's odd that if they had this plan to come together, why would they not work together during the match? Why would they wait till did something happen? Are we going to be told that something happened over the course of the match that made Ruby Soho
shock value? We got to have the shock value.
You're talking about that she had this jacket or whatever. I mean, she was obviously thinking about it. If that was foreshadowing, it makes no sense why they would wait till they lose to turn. I mean, I think some people be like, oh, well, I'm excited to see Ruby Soho as a heel now. Okay, whatever. I don't think she should get the belt, whether she's a baby face, a heel, a tweener, or whatever. I would have Jade team up with Britt and Hayter against the three if they're going to do a six woman match.
I like that.
I would do just to I think because Jade's kind of meandering right now. I think that would be a good use of her moving forward. But, you know, again, I mean, I think, you know, one of the big stories, you know, again, is not just that the AEW homegrowns won virtually every match tonight. It's that the right person won every match. And that, I mean, I think taking the title off Jamie Hayter would have been dumb here. So at least they didn't do that.
Yeah.
Match was whatever.
Yeah. Decent. I mean, not great. Not something to go out of your way to watch. This next one, though, was. So the Texas Death Match, Hangman Adam Page, John Moxley. Hangman had a new entrance, which was really good. Totally gives him the main event feel. I thought his old theme was fine.
But... It was a little generic, little stock, it sounded like. But I think it's just going to be a one-off, they said. The music guy tweeted. Yeah, I think.
Oh, he said, man.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bummer because it was great. He came out to Ghost Riders in the Sky. And a whole new Titantron, or not Titantron, I guess it was AEW, whatever. We all call it the Titantron. Yeah, the Tron. And crowd went nuts for this. Moxley comes out, and as Moxley comes out through the crowd, as usual, Hangman blindsides him to start the match. He takes barbed wire to Moxley's forehead to draw juice really early on. Hangman wrapped barbed wire around his leg, gets caught by Moxley. Moxley pulls out a fork out of his boot. This was insane. He starts stabbing Page in the head, and the first time he hit him with that fork, blood literally squirted out.
And then Mrs. Ross went running out of the room.
Cammy's My wife like, also still had it on in the other room from where I started watching the show, and she came down and she was like, "This is too far."
Yeah. Cammy goes, what did she say? "This is not right."
Yeah.
It was like 1998 Jim Ross.
Dude, it was crazy. He's just grinding this fork into his forehead. Blood is splattering. He's hitting him. Blood is flying off of Page. Moxley gets a chair wrapped in barbed wire, and he wedges it into the corner. Hangman goes face first into it, and they kept selling for the rest of the match. There was like skin hanging on that barbed wire on the chair. It looked like it was hair, but it was hanging there. Moxley locked Page into a single leg crab on top of the chair with barbed wire. Moxley sets up chairs back to back, and he wraps barbed wire around them. Page ends up powerbombing Moxley onto those chairs. Page then wraps his torso in barbed wire, and he hits a moonsault off the top to the outside. He sets up a table and barbed wire on the outside. Gets back into the ring. He gets a cutter from Moxley when he's coming through the ropes. Mox pulls out this big, thick chain and some bricks out from under the ring. And he smashes Page's hand between the bricks with a stomp. Mox gives Page a pile driver onto this big chain. He tries to slam Page onto the chair and barbed wire, but Page reverses it into a suplex. Moxley jumps up, screams, you know, getting hyped, only to be clotheslined immediately. That was really good. Page gives a fallaway slam to Moxley onto the barbed wire chair, follows that up with a dead eye onto the barbed wire chair. Moxley rolls to the outside. Page jumps to the outside, sending Moxley into the table and barbed wire that he had set up on the entranceway. They get up to the top turnbuckle. They take turns. Oh my God, Kyle, with this camera that's, you know, up there, so you get these close-ups. They're taking turns of scratching each other with their fingernails across each other's backs. Moxley then grabs the barbed wire and he starts scraping it across Page's back. Oh man, Mox sends Page off the top through a barbed wire table on the outside. It was like a flip that Page took. He took most of that landing on his head to the table. Referees checking on him. Officials are checking on him. Page gets up, breaking the KO 10 count. Gets a big clothesline when he gets into the ring. He beats that 10 count as well. Page hits a lariat and goes for the buckshot, but he runs into a Death Rider DDT from Mox. And then Mox hits a curb stomp onto the bricks to Page. He beats the count. Moxley puts on a rear naked choke. Page breaks the count. Both men are grabbing a chair. Hangman hits a lariat out of the corner. Paige wraps that chain, that thick chain, and puts a choke around Moxley. But Moxley gives him a low blow with a kick. Paige nails him with a brick to the head. Mox has these chains wrapped around his neck, and Paige hits the buckshot as Moxley flips him off. He's flipping him off. He hits the buckshot anyways. Paige then clotheslines Mox out of the ring. You know, he's got this chain wrapped around Moxley, and he uses that chain to choke Moxley over the top rope as Moxley actually taps out for the finish. This was a hell of a match.
Great.
Unbelievable.
Finish.
It's quite the spectacle. Kyle, would you go 5 stars on this? Close?
I don't know. I have to rewatch it again. I don't rate matches when I've only seen them once. So, again, kind of like with MJF, I think the key here was Hangman Page is feels far more over, far more important now than he did coming in. That's because, I mean, the loss of momentum he had over the last year was quite striking. I hope moving forward they tone down the self-doubt. Like, I don't want to, oh, God, he's drinking again because he doubts himself. How about he drinks because he likes it? That's cool. Like, you don't want him to be like my issue with this feud going in was that he just felt like the less cool babyface vis-a-vis Moxley. But this was the kind of performance and results that can sort of eradicate that. And then, you know, we'll see if we can get him back to where he was, 15 months ago or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that's the key, you know, how he's, because I mean, you look back since he lost the title, what has he done? Paige.
Yeah, that's the problem, is he was kind of middling, and you're wondering, is he even going to be in the main event scene moving forward? Yeah. But I think this match cemented him as a main eventer. The presentation cemented him as a main eventer. This was it sounds weird since he's been the world champion, but this was, I think, the match that will for sure solidify him at the top of the card. And, I think Moxley probably going to lean into that heel bit more going forward. We know before he took his absence, he was starting to go heel. Mm-hmm. I think that's the direction for him.
I wouldn't mind that. So I guess we need to talk about like just the style, just how extreme and how far they took it. Right. I mean, cause they were, I thought there was, you know, Raj Geary again. I mean, come on with his,
he had to turn it off. He was disgusted.
Yeah. I mean, I get that it's off putting to some people. I mean, I joked about my wife running out, but you can't really, you know, if you're AEW, you shouldn't appeal to make my wife happy. She's not going to watch regardless. So, but do you think that this match would have been even more effective if Moxley hadn't had so many bloody brawls on television?
Yeah, there was some discourse about this in the group too. I think he bleeds too much on TV. I agree with that. I don't think that it took away from this one just because it was such an incredible match. I do think you should tone it down on TV. I think there's too much. I think there's too much blood. I think there's too many matches on shows that bleed on TV. They'll have multiple matches.
I mean, how many matches had blood on this show? Alone. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I like blood. Yeah. But I mean, you know, again, I just think that, you know, that they need to have him tone it down on television a little bit. But with, yeah, I think, all things considered, again, right result. I like shows where the right people go over. I think this was the right result moving forward, because I don't want to see Moxley back in the world title picture. I just don't.
Yeah.
So Paige going over was the right call. And again, like the Iron Man, I'm really excited to go back and rewatch it now that I know the result and kind of know what's coming, to slap a nice rating on it. I'll let people know what that is when I rewatch it.
I think for sure it's 4.5 or over to me, just on the first watch. I thought it was incredible live. I will initial reaction.
That feels right, that it was a match of the year contender. Absolutely. Which 4.5, you know, I'm just so used to like all these people overrating everything in the moment now that I even more want to rewatch things before even speaking of a rating.
I think the main event, Dave might break the 5-star scale on it, but I would be shocked if he doesn't go 5 on both of them.
He gave the women's elimination chamber 4 stars, he should give the main event fucking 8 stars if he's going to give that four stars.
That was hideous to give that 4 stars. All right.
Higher than the 92 Rumble.
Yeah.
Say that out loud. The 2023 WWE Women's Chamber match was better than the 1992 Royal Rumble.
It's not good, Kyle.
Not fucking good.
Neither was trying to follow this match. TNT title match. Samoa Joe defending against Wardlow. Talk about a death spot. Boy, I mean, this was a really good crowd throughout. I think they had about 9,000. This is a big building. It was not totally sold out. But they had, I think they had over nine. He said on the scrum, I want to say it was like around 95 ish in the building, a little over 8,000 paid. They had a really large gate for this show. But yeah,
that's what WrestleTix had at 8,000 something paid or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They needed a Hardy concert to break it up. I think
they were burned out after the Texas death match here. And you can't really blame
them. Remember the intermission? Remember they used to do intermission at the early WrestleManias? Yeah. Maybe AEW needs to do an intermission, because it is really unfair to the people who have to follow, because unlike WWE, AEW pay-per-views are going to have multiple matches that try to win the night, right?
Yes.
Whereas WWE is always about, they're going to put all the eggs in the main event basket. It's very rare on a WWE show where an undercard match is going to get more bells and whistles than you're going to get in the main event. So they're, they don't need, but AEW could maybe think about an intermission. I don't know. I mean, their shows go long enough, so maybe intermission is the last thing people want, but I think it's something worth bringing up.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, Wardlow, he comes out, he's hitting a lot of offense early. He flips out of the corner, crowd's dead. Wardlow does some really, especially after what we had just saw with such an intense match, they have, you know, the spot where he's jamming his shoulders and Joe in the corner, and they looked so weak. And it was like, oh, this ain't gonna get over. Just doesn't work after that intense match that we just saw. Joe turns the tide, hits some leg sweeps. Crowd comes back a little bit as Joe's getting heat throughout. And he works over Wardlow for a while here, and they kind of get on him. He gets the heel heat. Wardlow hits this big headbutt, where he just really reared back and comes forward with it, and he ends up choking out Joe with his own hold for the win, kind of out of nowhere. New champion. You got Wardlow with the TNT title now again, and he'll be taking on Hobbs Wednesday night, and they show Hobbs up in the suites watching it with the gold ring. And Hobbs confronted Wardlow at the scrum afterwards too. He came out through the, you know, the press in the room and talked about that match coming up Wednesday night in Sacramento. So that'll be an interesting one, Kyle, because felt like Hobbs could get a run here.
Yeah, okay. Narrow view here. Again, we have an AEW homegrown being a guy who's migrated from the WWE. So I know Mike Johnson does not like Wardlow. I see the comment there. But I think that so in the narrow sense, okay, Wardlow gets his win back, but does that mean much if he loses to Hobbs in a few days? I think big picture, what we need to be focused on is the TNT title itself. They've got to get the prestige back in that thing. I think, again, over the last year, it's lost a lot. You know, Scorpio Sky, I still don't to this day understand why he would ever have held that title. I don't really like Wardlow in the championship role, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who gets over doing stuff like the Powerbomb Symphony, kicking, you know, smaller guys' asses. People like that. And then I think where he would work in a main event scene would be, you know, if there's another kind of top of the card guy who's constantly getting beat up by two heels, Wardlow's a guy that, like, that, you know, top main event babyface could go to and say, hey man, I need you as my partner. I think that would work well for Wardlow. I don't really know if I like Wardlow as the TNT champion. I don't know if I like Hobbs in that role. To me, it's a belt that, you know, especially if you have MJF defending the world title infrequently, should be like a workhorse type deal where you have a guy.
Jungle Boy. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the belt, and Meltzer made this point, and I could not, and, you know, I just, you know, poo-pooed Dave 5 minutes ago, but I'll completely agree with him here. Dave was like banging the drum that Danielson was like tailor-made for the TNT title, right? Mm-hmm. And he was, and it's somebody like that. I mean, right now, I mean, Takeshita, honestly, is a guy that I think should be the TNT champion, but it looks like it's going to be between Wardlow and Hobbs moving forward. And it'll be interesting. They just need to get the prestige back in that title. Pick one and go with them, man.
It's kind of become the big meaty men title.
Yeah, which is what I don't think it should.
Title.
Yeah, I don't know if, you know, Although, I mean, Miro was great when he was the champion. He was. To be honest, the belt hasn't been the same since he lost it.
I agree. And to round out this coverage here, it's a tag team title match. So the Guns, I don't know if we've got your take on the show about them being the champions, but you got the Guns out there, of course, defending the titles against Danhausen and Orange Cassidy, the Acclaimed, and Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal. So, Kyle, what are your thoughts on the Guns as the champions? Do you think it was the right decision to have for the Acclaimed to lose the belts to these guys?
No, but I mean, my take was, I kind of mentioned this when we did the extra with Frank. As soon as they won, alarm bells went off in my head when I was like, oh, they must have FTR re-signed. And FTR is going to take the pelts off the Guns because they don't want to do FTR and the Acclaimed. Do you want to, I don't know if you want to go through the match. I mean, because I could go on a big tangent here about, I mean, my whole issue, I have a big issue with the booking of the tag division right now. And I don't think it's the Guns' fault. I actually think it might be Tony Khan outsmarting himself here. Because I'll be honest, I'm just going to say it right now. I think pivoting to FDR as the champs instead of the Acclaimed is actually a mistake.
Yeah. No, I think if you wanted to move the belts to FDR, if you're set on that, I don't see why you don't just have the Acclaimed work with them. I know they're two babyface teams, but also like to have those guys share the ring with FDR would be a positive.
I think they do too many babyface matches. And I think FTR is afraid that the Acclaimed's more over.
I think they probably are right now.
Yes.
Yeah. But I don't think the Guns should have won the belts. I don't like the idea of moving the belts to a team that's just not that over. I like them too, but they're not tag team champion level.
No,
I would go to the grave saying that these guys should not be tag team champions. I'm sorry, they're fine. Well, they're good workers.
They're not champions, is what they are. I don't think
I don't think you need to do that.
In a perfect world, and again, it's the booking, and I don't think Tony's done a great job booking his tag division over the last year, quite frankly, because you go back. In a perfect world, FTR should have had a long run last year.
Yes.
We talked about this how many times that, you know, you had Jurassic Express, the Bucks had a cup of coffee, Swerve and Our Glory. And the whole time, FTR's got every other belt in the world, except the WWE belts, obviously. And the announcers are calling FTR the best team in the world, but they're not the AEW tag team champions.
Mm-hmm.
So like in a perfect world, FTR would have had a long tag title run last year. They would then have lost it. You know, maybe you turn them heel, you align them with Punk, and they put over the Acclaimed.
Yes.
And the Acclaimed get their run now. But unfortunately, as I've said a few times, the world's not perfect. I just think the ship has sailed on a long-term FTR tag title run. Are they a better working team than the Acclaimed? Absolutely. But if I was Tony Khan and I'm looking at, like, you know, reactions and who I would just want to push to the forefront, it's the Acclaimed right now.
I agree with you. The perfect world scenario is FTR would have dropped them to the Acclaimed. I think that it just with the Guns, the tie-in with their dad and the Acclaimed, fine. I mean, maybe something will come of that, but like they just don't feel like tag team champions, and the storyline is fine, but if you want to get the belts to FTR, if that's your goal, I would have rather seen them work with the Acclaimed, like I said. But I think the reverse is true. It should have been FDR dropping it to the Acclaimed and not vice versa. But here we are. And it feels like, you know, FTR, they're trying to re-sign them. When's their contract up? Soon? If they haven't re-signed? April? They're back now.
Yeah. I would assume if they're back, they've re-signed.
Yeah, you would think so.
Re-signed. He had to give them the tag titles. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if that was a stipulation to re-sign them, I don't have a problem with it because I wanted them to re-sign. I don't want to see these guys go back to WWE. Jesus. They can do many more interesting things here, but I hope the tag teams just aren't ever going to get the spotlight in WWE. And I mean, who are they working with that's going to excite you in WWE in the tag division?
Nobody. I mean,
they've already worked with everyone there. Yeah.
I just think if you leave the Acclaimed out in cold here, that's just a mistake. I just think
I agree. I don't think they should have lost the titles. Like I said, it didn't make any sense to me for them to lose the titles, especially we don't have the daddy ass turn anyways. So why do it?
As soon as they did, I knew what, like I said with Frank, as soon as they lost the titles, I knew what that meant. It meant that they probably re-signed FTR and they're going to move the titles to FTR. Mm-hmm. Like it really, yeah. And the Gun Club, if you remember, they beat FTR. So FTR is going to, you know, get their win back there. It just, I don't know. I just think taking the titles off the Acclaimed, whether it's the Gun Club or the frickin' Road Dog Club or the frickin' what, Bullet Club or the whatever club, I think it's just, it's a mistake. The Acclaimed were very, very over and should be the tag team champions.
Yeah. I think Justin and I said the same thing on the first show that we did after the title change a few weeks ago, where we said, yeah, obviously this is a sign they're just moving the titles over to FDR, but not a fan. I mean, Acclaim for a long time have been one of the hottest acts in the promotion, and they still are, but they don't have the belts, and then you worry what's going to happen to it long term when they're not in that picture. So we shall see. The match itself was fine. The Guns won after they hit Danhausen with the 310 to Yuma. I wrote right after that, right after they retained, it was just silence. There's just zero heat for these guys. And then Renee Paquette came out to interview them in the ring. They said, I just have one question. Who's an ass boy now? Crowd booed that. But I mean, is it really the kind of heat? I mean,
well, here's the thing. See, I think I think there's a lot of potential in the Gun Club. A lot, but the thing is, you have to go back to how they brought the Acclaimed along slowly, right? Like, I remember, like, talking, I think it was maybe during the pandemic, the Acclaimed beat, who'd they beat? Like, freaking SCU, and I remember there was some groaning in the crowd. I'm like, there's some potential with this Acclaimed. They just need to bring them along slowly. And that's the same thing with the Gun Club. They're kind of being thrown in the deep water just because they want to put the titles back on FTR. I don't blame this on the Gun Club at all. I don't either.
Yeah. I'm just saying they shouldn't be tag team champions. As I said, I think they're a decent team. I just don't think they're tag team championship ready right now.
Yeah, well, and the only reason they're champions though is to drop them to FTR, which is the issue. It's not so much like, oh, like they're not the right trend. It's that they're taking them off the Acclaimed to putting them on the FTR. I think that's just a mistake.
See, that's like my whole problem is I don't think you need a transitional champion. If they insist on moving them the belts over to FTR, just do a big match with your most popular team. I don't know. I think it devalues the tag team titles they have on these guys at this stage. And I was banging on the drum on the Acclaim for the last couple of years before they got the title. I mean, they could have been champions earlier. They've been hot for well over a year and a half at this point. But they built up to it slowly. It was a great moment when they won it. Should have done it all out, but it was fine at Grand Slam.
And they overcame that. Yeah, they overcame that.
Yeah, it was like, you know, it was a good moment. The match wasn't as good at Grand Slam, but it was fine. They got a good pop, and then they take the belts off them too early. So I don't think the booking of the Acclaimed has been that good. But here we are. And, you know, FTR, I like him a lot too. It'll be good to see him get the belts back, but I don't know. I don't know if they really need him right now. Certainly, they're deserving, but
they're going to get them because they want them and they resigned.
I mean, obviously the play is the trios match with them and Punk. That's what I was hoping for, that they'd save them. They get Punk back on board. I think in the predictions piece on SC Scoops, I picked the Elite to retain because I was hoping maybe double or nothing. They can get Punk back in the fold. That's your 6-man title match. That'd be far preferable. Yeah. I mean, we know they were going to work some trios matches before everything happened and the injury and everything, but
yeah, as far as the match, you know, itself, I just didn't like the concept of the match, you know, a four-way, two teams winning battle royals to get in. I thought that kind of reeked. I think the play was like what I would have done. Again, I'm not into transitioning the titles to FTR. I thought they shouldn't have rushed that Acclaimed Jarrett Lethal rematch, and they could have just done a rematch here. Because I thought Jarrett and Lethal did a great job working with the Acclaimed. Because the Acclaimed still need to work with experienced teams. That was the problem with that. Why that Acclaimed Guns match fell apart is it's kind of two greener teams, you know, that an AEW doesn't do house shows where they can flesh out like having a great match together. So they just threw green and the match fell apart. I thought the especially the first one that they had on Dynamite in Seattle, Jarrett and Lethal versus the Acclaimed, was tremendous. I thought if you had not just rushed the rematch, doing a rematch here, because Jarrett and Lethal get good heat because people don't want to see them win the titles so badly, that I think just doing a rematch between Acclaim and Jarrett and Lethal, with Acclaim retaining, obviously would have been the what I would have done in the tag division.
Yeah,
here for this pay-per-view.
Yeah, that would have been preferable. I agree. So there it is. That's Revolution 2023. Closing thoughts, sir.
Pay-per-view over-delivered. You know, I'll stand again by my comment that, you know, again, I think wrestling is always better when you anticipate the show and it's great. But I'll take the great show nevertheless. It does have an argument to be AEW's second best pay-per-view ever. I would say the only one that was definitely better would have been All Out 2021, which we were there together. Just because, again, of the anticipation we had going into that show, and it delivered. But let's you know, here's to AEW having a better 2023 than they did in 2022, in my opinion. And I think the booking of this show allows for some interesting things moving forward. They put the right people over. That's what you can ask for. And hopefully things continue to rise and the TV gets better and we go back to looking forward to AEW pay-per-views going in.
I was a little more high on this one going in than you were. I know Justin was as well. I can't say like the whole card excited me. I certainly didn't have an All Out 2021 like feel for this one, but no, I was pretty jacked for the main event, and it's an hour match. It's a good chunk of it. Yeah.
I don't know. I've been very honest. I've not been fed into AEW since All Out.
Yeah.
And I'll stand by Mark.
I was jacked for this one. I was jacked for the Texas Death Match. Trios, kind of in the middle. I thought it would be a good match. But yeah, they delivered and then some. I think you can't really dispute that this was an A show. So good stuff out of AEW. $50 well spent for me.
It was, you know, just in terms of the build was uneven and then like being better. Like it kind of, I saw people comparing to like the Forbidden Door show, which was like another like A show, I thought, where, you know, the build for that was probably even more messy and worse. Yes. And I think this show was slightly better than that. So, and that's regarded as one of the best AEW shows ever. So yeah, I think really this show probably does, you know, and again, I like to go back and rewatch things. It probably does have an argument as the second best pay-per-view in company history. And yeah, you can't complain about that.
I think it's in the argument. All Out 2021, last year's Revolution, and this year's Revolution. Probably like the top three. So, yeah. Good stuff. Check it out if you missed it. Appreciate everyone joining us here on the live stream here on Monday morning. Little change of pace here. I will get the podcast up immediately after we go off the air. Hope you enjoy it. If you're on the podcast feed, join the Facebook group. If you're watching, you see I'm wearing the Top Rope Nation hoodie. I wanted to point out our store. I don't pump our merchandise very much, but our store is 20% off for the next few days right now. Some really good deals on there. I think you can get a hoodie for less than $30, something like that. So if you go to topropenation.com, the merchandise link there will take you to our Spreadshirt store, where it is 20% off for, I think, 3 or 4 more days. So check it out. Patreon.com/TopRopeNation. And I think Justin and I will be recording a show later this week. And so we will see you then, everybody. Have a great week and take care.